Get a jump start on 2024 in a new Kia from Robert Brogdon's Olathe Kia. Shop their large selection, including the new Sorento, Niro, and Soul models. You'll score big with low prices, trade assist cash, and a 30-day money-back guarantee. Visit OlatheKia.com.
The Zone is presented by Guarantee Foods, delivering all-natural food to Midwestern families since 1958. Enjoy healthier food, more free time, free delivery, and better value. Go to GuaranteeFoods.com.
All right, we continue right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jason Anderson with you, Sterling Holmes, Dylan Michaels. Hanging out with Les Norman, Breaking the Norm, presented by TruckMovers.com and First Federal Bank of Kansas City. Les, what's up, brother?
We are 33% larger in this room. Welcome, brother.
You are like my neighbors.
Yeah.
State Farm is there.
Yeah. It's even more exciting in here now. I love it. I know. I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Oh, we are doing fantastic. Doing fantastic. You know what? The Royals are 6-4, and they get ready for a big series against the Astros. This is fun. They did what they had to do against the White Sox. They swept them. They made a bad team continue to look bad. And how many times have the Royals been on the other side of that discussion? And they finally did it to the other team where it's like, wow, really, you couldn't catch that? Oh, one play, and now they score three runs based on your one bad play.
Yep.
It was nice to see the Royals do that for a change, which also kind of makes it feel a little bit different this year than in years past.
Yes, and my youngest son has an answer for the closer if it continues down this path and we need to make a change.
Him?
No.
Oh, okay.
Although he would do it in a heartbeat. But he says that we should just sign Trevor Bauer.
I mean,
be our closer. He wants the minimum.
That's intriguing.
That's a conversation. That's a conversation.
Spin it up, spike it where you will.
His velo has been up too.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
stuff
that's
so good.
Slider solid. I've heard way worse ideas.
I'll tell him.
Yeah.
I'll make sure.
Then you get into the whole aspect of what was true, what was false. What are you willing to accept?
Yes.
How much does it mean? All of that stuff. Yeah.
I don't think he wanted to go into all that. He was like, oh, it's just a fun idea.
Yeah. There's a lot more to it than just bringing him in, but there are a lot of people that are like, just do it.
What's
just
Trevor Hoffman up to? That changeup still has to be pretty salty right now.
What's Rivera up to?
Well, I had a cutter, but the velo goes down. Trevor Hoffman with that changeup. Raleigh fingers. Goose Gossage.
Well,
what's Goose up to?
I'm not sure. But, I mean, if the velo's going down, then less injury. That's what we see. We'll talk about that later on in the show. But how'd you do in your bracket? You win? You good?
And another year, another day of mourning after. I mean, look, I had three out of the four, which was best in my house. This is the home,
nice.
The Norman home. Right.
Good.
Three out of four in the final four.
Take that,
nails.
Everybody.
Right.
Yeah.
Alabama jacked my bracket
who'd
up.
Who'd you have
perfectly.
Instead of Alabama?
North Carolina.
You had North Carolina?
I did.
Okay.
North Carolina. And then I'd
pick
the national championship game perfectly. I had UConn. I had Purdue. I had Purdue riding it out in a very close game. I mean, it's the odds of repeating are very tough.
Mm-hmm.
And UConn won, and that's great. And they handled their business. And, man, what a great run. What a great team and coaching and all that. But, again, my wife picks UConn. She knows nothing. Nothing.
She went chalk. She just went with the
these one seeds are better than everybody
team,
else.
One team in the final four.
Oh no!
And I had her on points, except if she wins, if UConn wins, then I set it up where you get 25 bonus points, and she won and got the 25 bonus points. And normally she's not a gloater; that is not her style.
Oh, no.
She's like, oh, I'll just let you guys pick where we go to dinner, one of the boys and all that. And last night she gloated. Until I fell asleep eventually, and it hurts. It hurts today, fellas. My pride is stung.
Years worth of bragging rights,
man.
Is what she has over you now.
Yes, and I'm not a gambler, and I could probably ride that train into the Millionaires Club, and I just I just can't do it. But, yeah,
well,
I'll just have to get over it. It makes you stronger, right?
It's fine. It's all good. And it was great that the Royals took yesterday off.
Yeah.
Last night off. They didn't have a game, so we didn't have any split, you know, didn't have to take the look at the two different TVs and everything like that. So we got to just watch the national championship game. And then starting tonight, you know, at 6:40, we watched some more baseball with the Royals and the Houston Astros. But through the first 10 games, you know, I joked about this yesterday with Mick that, you know, if the season ended today, one, it would be an incredibly short season.
Yeah.
But the Royals would be in the playoffs.
They would.
Right now, they're the final wild card spot in the playoffs, which is showing you sort of how you play at that level. I mean, they're playing some pretty good baseball.
They really
but
are.
6-4 is, you know, you,
should be
600 percentage. But, yes, could be, I don't know, 10-0. But what have you seen these first 10 games? What's an area that you look at and go, okay, this is where what we're seeing now has more staying power than, oh, this is just a cool 10-game stretch, which happens. Even bad teams go 6-4 over 10 games.
Right, but we've had conversations about the revamped starting pitching and how they went out and got the free agents, and then near the end of spring training, how they put Marsh into the five spot, in the fifth rotation spot. And, you know, they were first, I think ERA-wise, they're second behind the Red Sox, but only by a couple points at 160 in ERA. That's been the major thing for me. You're getting good strikeouts, you're getting quality starts, you're getting, you know, 1-2 no runs, you're getting shutouts already. And granted, let's realize that they're not going to do that the entire year, every single game. Mm-hmm. But I mean, after 10 games, I mean, this is a rotation that is stuffing it, man. They're doing a great job. So that's glaring to me. I did not see MJ Melendez come out and get this hot this early, but it's not just that he has a good start. People have good starts that you don't expect, and people have bad starts that you don't expect. It's just the nature of baseball. But the pitches he's taking, the fact that he's using the whole field, the fact that he just looks comfortable, it still annoys me the way he takes pitches because I'm a technical dude, and he, like, squats down and jumps in the air like, oh, stop doing that. But you can do whatever you want when you're hitting 323 after 10 games. You got three bombs, a couple games in a row that he's got some big hits. And so, yeah, he's crushing the ball, and it's just been a good balance for me. Starting pitching's been fantastic, and the way some of these guys have come out, Bobby Witt Jr., obviously, and then Salvi, Velasquez is hitting well. I mean, it's just been really cool to see.
You know it's going well, and things are falling in your favor when a ground rule double is called a home run.
Yeah.
You know, because last year, the home run would have been called a ground rule double for MJ Melendez. It would have been just the exact opposite of, can I get a break here?
Right.
And he caught a break he's got three home runs. That will be three home runs the rest of the season. And by the way, if it wasn't Kauffman Stadium, you know, it would have been a home run somewhere else. I mean, it's 410. All right, a center field. Move the fences in when you build new.
I've done that in college, by the way, where I jumped too late and like went into the ball and my glove didn't close in time and I was at the wall and knocked it over the fence. Now, I know this is different because it hit the wall, then went in his glove, and then it bounced over the fence.
Right.
But, yeah, that's as an outfielder, he will have nightmares.
Not Jose Canseco.
No,
at least you didn't do that off the dome.
No.
Yeah, I mean, that's a home run because it didn't touch anything but the player.
But could that have happened to a more apt player to
no,
to
no that, that's the,
that was the yes. right mojo, the right karma for that guy.
That or Jose Guillen would have had it and then somehow brought the ball back and just thrown an absolute hose to third base.
Right.
That's the only
probably
two options.
Yeah. Yes. It was really surprising. Like, I watched the game, right? Mm-hmm. And I saw it happen. And for some reason, I didn't think anything of it either. And the broadcast and everything, neither team, umpires, nothing. And then the next day, it's like, oh, by the way, that should have been ground rule double. Well, it took a day later.
Why didn't the outfielder, maybe he didn't see it. Maybe he didn't know. Because everything happens so fast when you're out there.
He just jumped up, and it looked like it was bang, bang, raw glove over to where, okay.
You're looking up at the ball, and there's so much sound, and you're grunting, and you're jumping, and all that. I mean, that was a great defensive play even to get there and make it that close. But, if he would have said something and, you know, put his hands over his ears like, hey, you need to review that, they probably would have changed it. Mm-hmm. They didn't, obviously.
Yeah.
And so,
and then
it's just crazy.
Reviewed the one
and then
the
they
next
reviewed the
day.
One that was a home run.
Well, right.
That's what they're probably like, you know what, we're not getting burned twice. We will review this one. You're not going to get us twice, MJ. If that kid reached over, and he did reach over the railing, but what you can't see on the broadcast is that the railing is,
it's back.
It's behind the wall. It's not the railing right above the wall.
Well, who would have thought the White Sox, with all the former Royals players from the Hunter Loss era, and then the manager and all the front office members would all of a sudden be like, hey, wait, they didn't work for them. Why is it not working for us? Like, I don't understand the White Sox game plan when they did this. It's a horrible game plan. Mm-hmm.
I love it.
I mean, I guess I do love it.
Chris Getz, double agent.
Yeah.
That's what I'm going with.
Him and Pedro.
Yeah, thank you, Pedro. They just don't have Bill DePlisa. That's why they didn't review that. they brought the wrong people over.
They
brought the replay analysts over, Bill DePlisa would probably, like, immediately, hey.
Yeah, that's the third thing that stood out for me, is we have the best replay analysts. By far.
I mean, it's ridiculous. It's there, but go ahead.
I was going back to the Royals pitching really quickly, because I know you mentioned it's not sustainable necessarily at the way it's going, and why I completely agree. I don't expect this massive drop off.
Right.
Like, you look at it's not like they're doing things that Seth Lugo is probably the only one so far that some of the underlying numbers say, okay, he's in line for a little bit of regression right here. Mm-hmm. But when you look at Cole Reagans and even what Brady Singer has done, Michael Wacha has done, even Alec Marsh, which is very impressive, the FIP, the fielding independent pitching, a lot of the expected ERA, everything's in line. And a lot of it because of the called strike rate is just so high. They're filling up the strike zone. Mm-hmm. They're getting a lot of swing and misses. Not necessarily a ton of strikeouts. They're not walking anyone.
They're not putting people on base. I mean, guys aren't getting on base either.
And they're getting a lot of weak contact, especially ground balls. And a lot of teams don't necessarily do that because they want to get fly balls. It depends on the stadium, obviously. But with Kansas City, when you have Michael Garcia, and I have some of his baseball savant numbers up, and Bobby Witt Jr. and how good he is defensively, Nick Lofton is actually graded out very well. Adam Frazier graded out very well. Honestly, what's kind of interesting is Vinny Pascantino's rated very well defensively so far this season. You got a great defense.
Mm-hmm.
The Royals are using them as well. It's different than the fly ball pitchers. They say, you know what, let's keep it on the ground. We got guys that can get to every single ball.
Yep.
I've just been so impressed with the starters, the game plan so far. It will, yes, not be a 1.6 ERA going forward, but to keep it in the low to mid threes, I think, is realistic.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think two things that stand out for me there, too, is that when Brady Singer was supposed to be the stud in the rotation, then it was, well, he's not using his changeup enough. And Brady Singer right now in his career, in my opinion, is not a guy mentally that can translate physically into the stud of a rotation. But by the Royals going out and getting Lugo and getting Wacha and having Marsh be in that mm-hmm. spot and Cole Reagans coming in.
Cole Reagans, yeah.
That Brady Singer should be sitting at home like, oh, thank you, thank you. The pressure is off me. And now I can unlock the stud that is in me. I mean, he needed that leadership. He needed that. It's not pressure like I'm going to fail. It's the pitchers have, even though I wasn't a pitcher, I've been around them enough to understand that they've got this little fraternity of the pitching staff as a whole. And then as the five starters, they want to go out and better each other every start, but yet they're on the same team. Mm-hmm. Like they're competing, but they're competing within a brotherhood. They're not competing within, I'm better than you kind of thing. And so I think that is a big blessing. Also in 10 games, I've been to three of them at the stadium, and Melendez has played some really good outfield. Really good outfield. His arm is good. His angles are good. Again, is that sustainable? I don't know. I mean, but again, Alex Gordon worked hard to become a multi-gold glover. So who knows?
And that was one of the things I was going to ask you about MJ Melendez, because we talked about, before the season, how much do you buy into MJ saying, as soon as the season was over, put the catcher's gear away and learning the outfield, and spent all winter long learning the outfield, learning right field, left field, whatever it was. They get Renfro in right field. All right, now I'm just going to learn left field. And how much that meant to him mentally, to where he wasn't trying to learn a position at the big league level while also struggling at the plate and taking the issues at the plate out to the field, taking the issues in the field up to the plate.
That's maturity.
And that's tough to do, and especially if you're digging into the box and you're looking up at a big scoreboard that says 107 batting average, a little difficult,
That's three stories high. Zero.
That's right. It's right there just flashing at you, MJ. 260 on base percentage.
And there's probably no fans behind him either on the road or at home that are reminding him when his back is to the board.
Easy out. Right. Say, come on, just throw it over the plate. Let this guy hit it, because he probably won't anyway.
Right.
And even if he does, it ain't going anywhere. But now that, maybe he's more comfortable in left field, he certainly looks more comfortable as a defender, that at the plate can be more comfortable. And from a confidence standpoint, getting off to this start, I have to imagine, just does wonders for him because of the awful start that he got off to last year. That, if he got off to another awful start this year, you would hate to and worry that in his mind would be, here we go again. I mean, come on, I put in all this work and I can't translate what the last month and a half was last year to this year.
That is so hard to do, and it takes a high level of maturity and self-confidence to know that in one area of your game you might be on your last leg. Knowing that if I don't hit, I might be back in AAA, and if I don't play defense, I can still hit, but then I'm going to DH, and I'm probably not built for DH career-wise. And so it takes a strong human to put that aside. You can't ignore it because it's just out there. Numbers, fans, media, it's out there. But to be able to come and put that behind you and be mentally strong enough to hit like he's hit, and then to be able to go out and really work, it's obvious that what he said, as soon as it was over, I'm going to go work on outfield. It obviously, and again, just 10 games, small sample size, but it has shown because I'm watching his routes. I'm watching him hit cutoff men. I'm watching the way he dives at balls, his just every part of his game that I don't always watch the pitch. I'm watching, okay, how are you reacting? How are you moving? And I hear it, but I'm still watching that outfielder. The way he's backing up guys, he's not taking pitches off. You can just really tell that amongst the pressure and his work ethic, he has done a good job.
With MJ, I know that some of the executives, upper managers talk about how many plate appearances at bats you need in a big league to sort of get an idea of what the player is.
Mm-hmm.
It's different than this. I wonder how many games do you look at before you say, okay, this guy might, this has staying power. This is not just a nice 10-game stretch. Because All-Star break last year for MJ, when he took the All-Star break, took some deep breaths, relaxed, reset the shot clock, mm-hmm. and then went back out there. He played 59 games. 49 games last year. 50 games last year, 9 games this year. So it's 10 games in, but he's played 9 of them. So it's a total of 59 games, mm-hmm. which is about 36% of the season. Still a smaller sample size. But in those roughly 60 games, he's batting .280. He's getting on base at .370. He's slugging .516 for an .885 OPS in essentially 60 games. What he's done at the plate, if it's translated over 162, would be 35 home runs, 43 doubles, and 8 triples. It's 60 games. So that's where I look at it and go, well, this is a nice start in these 10 games. It's an awesome start in 10 games, but it's a small sample size. But it's a continuation of what he did after the All-Star break. And then had an offseason in between.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I wonder when you throw in the offseason in between, does that change? Does that make it a little bit more likely of sort of staying with what he did ending the season last year, that he started this way? Or do we still look at it as like it's 36% of a season and some guys through a third of the season can just look crazy awesome and then go into a complete and total slump? Because the first half of the season, he looked lost.
He did.
He was pretty bad. But since the All-Star break, he's OPSing at almost 900 in 60 games.
The only statistic or thing that I can focus on when you try to carry a previous year into a new year is that he maybe figured something out. You know, that's one of the first things I heard from a guy that worked in our minor league system and scouted a lot of us when we were younger and the prospects came up to the big leagues is back then the verbiage was, did he figure it out? It clicked. You know, we all know what that means, mm-hmm. and they say things different, and you can't reinvent the wheel, but, you know, technology gets better, and training gets better, and diet gets better, and facilities get better. But I feel like he maybe figured something out in the second half of last year, but I don't believe that the first half of this year was necessarily related to the string of, okay, well, he did it last year, and he's just going to do it, except mm-hmm. that maybe he did figure something out. Because once the offseason comes, it's a new year. When that ends, you're wiping the slate. Like, oh, I had a great year. Awesome. Man, I had a horrible year. Not awesome. But again, you've got those months where you have a plan for the next season, but your body's different. Maybe you get leaner. You know, for him, it was, I'm going to work really hard on the outfield. And, of course, he hit in the offseason. So he probably figured something out in the second half. He is more mature. He worked a lot harder. And he is playing for an organization maybe that said, hey, just go out there and play. Just go out and relax. The Royals and this generation have done extremely well with that, whereas in my generation, it wasn't. If you were a guy, you were a guy. I'm not talking about the Carlos Beltrans. I'm not talking mm-hmm. about the Jermaine Dyes of old, the Johnny Damons of old. I'm just talking about an organization that is now committed. Hey, you're the guy. This is the work we're going to put in. This is who's going to work with you. But it's your job. You don't have to stress about it.
I will also say, with MJ Melendez defensively, a very good point you brought up. The eye test is matching some of the backing on the analytics side of things.
Sure.
Again, I don't think he's ever going to be necessarily maybe an elite
right.
outfielder.
Probably
but again,
not.
His range last year was the second percentile, which a lot of that is your jump, right?
He was second best.
but even before your jump, it's your mindset of staying in the game. Mm-hmm. You have to be mentally strong and mentally prepared. And no, I mean, they all got the cards and they look
sure.
and all that, but you still have to be able to react to a ball going down the line in Kansas City, in Detroit, in San Diego, in New York. I mean, it's all different. Sounds are different. Sun is different. Atmosphere is different. Feel under your feet with the stadium is different. dimensions are different, and so you have to be able to know those. So it's always that homework and mental. Before then, it's jump, physicality, things like that.
So he went from second percentile this year, 37th. Again, I'm not saying that's elite, but that's a massive jump, again, for a guy who was a catcher learning outfield. Again, I'm not expecting him to be in the 80th the following year, but if he can get up to 56, just average, you're going to take that with his bat. His sprint speed is actually solid. He's in the 69th percentile here. Again, I'm giving a lot of numbers here, but I'm trying to show that this is not a fluke. There's some actual process behind this that is showing and backing the numbers. His average exit velocity is 97th percentile. His barrel percentage is 98th percentile. Hard hit percentage, 89th. And again, this going back to last year, his hard hit percentage was great. Mm-hmm. His average exit velo was great. The issue was he wasn't making enough contact.
Right.
He was striking out a lot. It was a lot of empty swings. He's always a guy that when he makes contact, he hits it hard. Mm-hmm. And that's been the biggest improvement for him this year is, I think, understanding the strike zone better, too.
Yeah, that's good. And again, that is confidence and a mental approach to the game. It's not just physical. We all got to work on our physical because, look, you can have the greatest mechanics, but if your timing is off, then you're not going to be successful. You could have poor mechanics with good timing and probably still compete and have some success. And so you have to make the decision to do that. You have to put the work in to do that. But it's so easy for us that we want to write people off that, yeah, well, MJ Melendez, he's not a catcher. We hear that in the media. We see it in print, whatever. And we look at the analytics. We look at the result. We look at the numbers. And we say, oh, yeah, well, he's not a catcher. Now he's probably not an outfielder. And he's probably going to be a 250 hitter. But then when a guy says, I'm going to go work, and then he does, and then you see that jump from second percentile to 37th percentile, that's an amazing jump. Let's not look at 37. Let's look at the 35 spots he jumped. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That takes hard work, and that takes confidence. And it takes a level of humility because when guys start getting, oh, look what I've done, well, then they must be at their peak. Be ready for the fall on the other side. And, again, we're talking about 10 games in the season, and then he's played in 9. Let's give him a break and understand that that's probably going to level off in some areas offensively. But defensively, before he gets tired at the All-Star break and when it's 105 out, when everybody gets tired and hot, let's just let him go. Let's give great credit where great credit is due because the guy worked hard. And this is the result of that hard work.
And the problem with him is he's not going to get a break over the All-Star break. I mean, he's going to be playing in the game. So,
well, you know, wouldn't that be awesome?
Clearly. But it is, like, we talk about the starting staff. And one of the things that we didn't talk much about, we discussed Hunter Renfroe coming in. And the big X factor being MJ Melendez, which is why I think this team is 6-4. Because if MJ Melendez is an X factor and he's doing this and playing a representative left field, you don't have to be Alex Gordon. Just don't be Billy Butler. You know, play a representative left field, which is what he's doing. You know, how much of an improvement is that spot? You've got 4 home runs right now combined with your corner outfield spot with Renfroe in right field and MJ Melendez in left. Last year, you had over 900 at-bats between Edward Olivares and MJ Melendez in left field and right field. That OPS barely over 700 and hit a total of 28 home runs and played god-awful defense, both of them. Edward Olivares was a DH playing left field, and MJ Melendez was a, I don't know. He wasn't a DH because he wasn't hitting, and he certainly wasn't a right fielder. So you got brutal defense with no pop in your corner outfield. You add in the starters that we're talking about. And now you have, hey, look, it sort of looks like you got professional corner outfielders in the game. Kyle Isbell does what he does and roam the outfield, and his jumps are magnificent. And, you know, his bat's coming along. But if you get somewhat of what MJ Melendez has done over 60 games, and you get the arm of Renfroe in right field who can run into at least 20 of them throughout his career, and if you get 25, 45 home runs and OPSing almost 800 and playing much better defense is vastly different than a couple of DHs playing in the corner outfield spot, and one of them not even good enough to be a DH in MJ Melendez. That's a massive improvement as well.
And by the way, most of the games so far in just this small sample size, again, have been at home, right? Mm-hmm. And aren't the Royals, what, 4th in the major leagues right now in home runs with 14?
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. I breezed by that stat, so I can be fact-checked in a heartbeat.
Well, they also played in a place that is cavernous in left field.
Yeah.
That, you know, home runs go to die. Mm-hmm. Like Hunter Renfroe hits a home run, you know, runs into one off of Crochet. That's an out in Camden. because I believe left field is 750. I'm just guessing. I believe it's 750.
I think it's 743 or something.
No, there were two hits by the Royals. There were two Royals players.
Was it Michael Garcia, I think, if I'm not mistaken. By the way, the Royals are fourth.
Yeah.
Fourth, yeah.
So there were two hits by the Royals that would have been a home run in 29 ballparks. Mm-hmm. But it was an out in Camden.
Right.
There were two of those that happened there. So, I mean, it just sort of, you know, matters what stadium you're playing in when you run into those as well. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back on the other side. I want to talk about a couple things with Les Norman, Breaking the Norm. He's presented by TruckMovers.com and First Federal Bank of Kansas City. We'll talk about some of the arm injuries that are going on. And also, Dan Hurley had a comment last night or over the weekend getting ready for the National Championship Final Four and talking about the types of players he recruits. And I heard it, and I immediately thought, I want to play this for Les Norman. So we'll do that when we come back. More Zone next.
I hate this song.
I know you do.
I hate it.
How?
Why, Dylan?
Can you put into even close a number of how often this was playing while you were warming up in the minor leagues and just going through batting practice or shagging fly balls?
Well, considering 98% of my entire professional career was spent in the minor leagues, probably a lot. I mean, I don't think it'd be in the thousands. Seriously. Because it'd play multiple times.
I can't
imagine.
Crowd
coming in.
Okay, I got one for you. This song or Don't Stop Believin'?
I'd rather hear Don't Stop Believin'.
I was
going
to say,
for a
baseball player.
Bold.
On loop. For you, understand though, you don't know this about me, but Steve Perry is one of my top three singers of all time.
Oh, I love Journey.
Yeah, but even just his voice. But
sure.
Yeah, pulling back into just the song, I would listen to it on a loop 24 hours a day before I'd have to hear this song that's still playing in the background. By the way, it's not fading completely out. See, I can hear it.
He hates
okay,
it so much.
Okay, fine. Final it. One, Sweet Caroline,
or.
Or that.
Or Fogarty.
I choose to be knocked out with a 2x4.
Yeah, yeah.
So
I choose
both.
I choose death.
Yeah.
I choose anything.
I wouldn't go that far, but yeah.
Well, yeah.
I would choose taking off my sock and eating it. Right now.
Did you boil it? Did you fry it?
Just eat it. I'll test my gut strength.
I will swim to the Dominican with help. Rather than listen to that's extreme. It's very extreme, Les. I'm not sure, Jason. I get it. I'm with you. I can't imagine. I like the song, but I also didn't go to all of those stadiums and hear it every single day.
I only played it because I know Les hates it so much, and I love Les, and I just wanted to, you know, just
is that how you show your love,
Dylan?
Did you
hear the sentence?
Wait, I love Les, so I played his least favorite thing.
We're men, isn't that sort of how you show your affection?
Exactly.
Yeah. I hate you. Punch. That guy really
Here's
loves
Fogarty.
You.
Apparently. Yeah. So next week when I come in, before I get my headset and come in, I'm going to stand at the doorway and just kick me in the crotch. Don't play the song, just kick me in the crotch, and then we'll be good. We'll call it even, because then I'll
Would you rather have that than hear the song?
Oh, gosh. Now we're starting to get into thinking, I might want to hear the song.
Would you rather?
Okay, a Razor scooter to the shin. Remember those bad boys? Those things hurt. Those things.
I would take that.
I got a real one here.
A real one, okay.
Alabama Cheap Seats or that song.
You know, we heard that a lot because we played in Chattanooga, but we didn't play in Chattanooga every year because I almost played in AA every year. But I'd probably hear Cheap Seats, but I wouldn't like it.
I agree.
I'd hear it, but I wouldn't like it. I'm not happy about it.
You still dig Green Onions, though, right? Green Onions, you know?
No, they're not good.
The synthesis. You hate onions. I'm talking about the song.
Yeah, don't care.
Play Green Onions. You know what I'm talking about, Dylan?
You said Green Onions, and I'm out.
I'm leaving. That's it.
Oregon.
I've shut down.
Oregon.
I've emotionally shut down. I'm no longer involved in the conversation. I've shut down. Les Norman is our guest.
For now.
Yes, that's right. So
hear that song again.
There are pitchers that are being shut down all over baseball. We're seeing that. Yuri Perez going under the knife. Shane Bieber is... going to have Tommy John. Spencer Strider, we'll see if he's going to have Tommy John. He's got damage to the UCL. It's no coincidence that two of those three guys are on my fantasy team, but whatever. Rough start. Is there, like, people are trying to figure out what's the deal. MLBPA comes out, and Tony Clark, it's about the pitch clock. Major League Baseball is, No, it's the pitcher's fault. Everything's max velocity. You know, we've heard people talk about the sticky stuff is now taken out of baseball. So was it Garrett Cole that talked about, I've got to grip the ball even harder, which puts even more pressure on my elbow because it's having to hold the ball, you know, harder. Is it, you know, different, a lot of different things that go into it. What do you see and what are you thinking when you're seeing so many of these pitchers obviously velocity mm-hmm. as well. So many of these pitchers that are, going under the knife and Tommy John and Spencer Strider might have his second here this year.
Thank goodness that he pitches near a time where technology is better. You can have two Tommy Johns and still pitch. Mm-hmm. You know, I think wasn't
Cole Reagans.
Yeah, didn't Joaquin Soria go through that too? You know, back in the day, I thought he did, but maybe I'm wrong. But guys can survive that. I mean, I remember playing against a guy named Steve Carsey who came up with Toronto and ended up pitching for the Yankees, and he was like low 90s. Came back from Tommy John, traded over to the Yankees, and he was now a starter throwing 97, 98, and so. I think there's so many things that contribute to it. I even read something the other day that they're starting to talk about, well, kids in these baseball tournaments. You know, your dad and your the little man's growing up to be a big man. And, mm-hmm. you know, if he keeps going in baseball and he's a pitcher, you know, there's guys that will pitch one game and then play shortstop or catch the next game. And in Championship Sunday, they're playing three or four games. And some tournaments, even five games, and it's too much. And so, and I think it is. And I know that. Some years ago when I interviewed Dr. Andrews on my show, he had talked about guys throwing curveballs too early. You know, I don't know if Spencer Strider, Shane Bieber threw curveballs too early. All I know, they're specimens. If you look at them, Spencer Strider, his lower half is so strong.
Tree trunks.
Yeah, but they're very lean, and they work out, and they eat right, and they take care of their arm, and they don't lift super heavy as far as a bodybuilder. They keep their elasticity, and they stretch, and they're elongated when they throw. But then we were talking in the break, too, about sometimes with mechanics. If a pitcher takes his arm back and his fingers are on top of the ball, in that position it rotates your shoulder, your capsule, forward. And you can't throw like that. So eventually it's going to have to release right at that moment where you're snapping it back and then snapping it forward. And so, look, the human body can only take so much stress. It wasn't built to throw a baseball 99 miles an hour or back in the day 89, 90 miles an hour. But guys are really good at it, and with technology and with medicine and with diet and nutrition and just working out and all of that, the physiological part of it, we're learning to elongate those. But again, you could have a guy that, you know, we were talking about Trevor Bauer joking around earlier. He doesn't have the greatest mechanics either, and he's still out there throwing. There are guys in the big leagues that don't have the best mechanics that are throwing and never get hurt. And so my answer over all this is, you just don't know, because you can take care of yourself and you can blow out and you can have lesser versions of that and not blow out. It's just, it's different for everybody. I think the bigger factor is certain guys can recover better than others.
I don't think there's any, at least to me, there's a direct correlation with the max velocity, max effort.
I do believe that, yes.
And blowing out the elbows and having to go through Tommy John.
There's more harder throwers than pitchers.
Right, but there's also more of a closer to or a less difference between your maximum and your minimum fastball coming in the pitch track since 2008. That number has been shrinking in terms of, here's a fastball that came in at 94, here's a fastball that came in at 99. This is what he worked at, but this is what he hummed it up. Here's a fastball that's coming in at 97, here's a fastball coming in at 99. And that's what he's working between. So he's getting closer to full-on max effort constantly. One of the things that always impressed me, especially early on about Zach Greinke, was when he would hum it in at 98, it looked so easy. It looked effortless.
It was effortless, yeah.
Leo Nunez looked like he threw his entire body at the at the plate just to get it to like 93, right? But Greinke was just like, oh, ho-hum, 98. Oh, ho-hum, here's 94. Oh, ho-hum, here's 91. I can just move it around. I can pitch. I'm working to get you off balance, mm-hmm. not throw 101 past you.
Right.
All right? I'm trying to pitch, and if that little bit of off balance gets you to pop up, fantastic. Get you to roll over, fantastic. Will Smith threw an 89-mile-an-hour fastball right past somebody with the White Sox the other day. He didn't have to throw 101 to get it past him because of the deception, because of the mixing the speeds. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, is we've seen since the pitch track started in 2008, and they started really studying it, they're seeing the max velocity of just the fastest throw in baseball has been roughly the same, anywhere from like 102 to 105 Aroldis Chapman's 105.7 is still the fastest pitch on record. And that happened in 2016. That's still the fastest. It's 2016. Mm-hmm. But what we're seeing is the average mile per hour fastball in baseball has continually gone up. Mm-hmm. It's gotten closer to the max. So the max fastest somebody has thrown is right around the same, going back to 2008. All right, so we're not getting to the point to where you're actually throwing it harder and faster. They're just doing it closer to that on an extreme every pitch level. And eventually you're going to break down if that's the case. They also did a study where it was looking at breaking balls, right, as what you were talking about, yeah. Sterling, with breaking balls and cutters. You had mentioned that yesterday and talking about the torque and what it does to the arm. 85 miles an hour is the study they did at the sweet spot for breaking balls. That above 85 miles an hour is when it sort of increases maybe your injury risk, but it also makes the ball move a lot more once you get above that. Mm-hmm. In 2023, pitchers threw nearly 44,000 more breaking balls above 85 miles an hour than they did in 2008.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, 44,000.
The hard slider.
The hard slider, hard everything. Hard changeup. I mean, throw a changeup at 90 miles an hour.
The splits. Yeah. Let me bring this factor into it, because we're reading and we're hearing and we're talking about, is it mechanics? Mm-hmm. Is it how often you play? Is it body type?
Is it pitch clock?
Mm-hmm. And that is a big one, because I can't argue with it because I'm not a pitcher. It just annoys me. But regardless of that, if you guys in your chosen athletic profession, if you could do this, you're probably going to play 5 years in the sport that you two want to play in, and you're going to make $3 million over that 5 years. But if you throw harder, you might play one or two more years, you might not, but you're probably going to make an extra $10 to $250 million.
Yeah.
How hard are you going to throw?
Yeah, that's what...
What are you going to do?
That is absolutely the dilemma.
I would rather play 3 years and air it out and make $250 million than pitch for 10 and make $30 million.
Okay, Jamie Moyer.
Exactly.
No,
he's obviously different. Yeah. I mean, Greg Maddux, the same thing.
You got 200 guys battling for one spot.
Absolutely.
Are they going to get the guy
so
with the,
much more pressure and yeah. so much more money? I got to compete. If these guys are throwing 97 and I'm really good at 92, but I can also throw 97, well, I'm going to try to throw 98.
Because I'm competing for that bullpen spot, and they're probably bringing up the guy with the stuff.
Yep.
And this guy's got great stuff. Okay, well, that's because he's working 97, 98. I feel like I'm better than him. I'm working 92, but I'm not getting noticed as much maybe because the stuff isn't there. It's not popping off the charts.
Two things. I'm going back to this. I want to hear your thoughts on this, Les. Frank Job, the creator of the Tommy John surgery, he should be in the Hall of Fame.
Agreed.
Sorry. Because here's another reason why. This is according to Wikipedia, so take it as you will. The procedures become so prevalent that an estimated one-third of all major league pitchers have undergone it.
Yeah, that's about right.
Think of that.
Seems about right, yeah.
One-third of all major league pitchers, estimated again, mm-hmm. have gone for Tommy John surgery.
It's crazy.
It used to be, you're done. Mm-hmm. Like, it used to be, sorry, your career is over. But now, as you even mentioned, some guys that were throwing 92 before it, they come back and are throwing 96, 97. Well, Verlander's 41.
Yeah.
Well, how many has he undergone?
Well, that's the Spencer Strider thing scares me because he's already had a Tommy John surgery. And we see guys with multiple Tommy John surgeries before. And Spencer Strider's humming it in at 100. And then all of a sudden he dropped down to 94. And it was like, okay, something's wrong. He was getting hit around. I'm an optimist, but I'm also a worrier that it's one of the reasons why you and I talked earlier this spring about, are you concerned about Reagan's humming it in there at 101 in spring training? Because I don't want Reagan's working 101.
Yeah.
I want him pitching and not just throwing. And he's good, but even though he's had two Tommy Johns, doesn't mean he won't have to go and have another one.
Right.
And that's scary.
We also don't know if that's max velo for him. We don't know if that's him.
If 101 ain't max velo, then he's on a different level.
Sure. No. But I'm saying, like, could he hit 103? And it wasn't like he was consistently at 101, but it was 100.
It was one pitch that hit 101. It was still scary to see that. You know, it's not cool to me. Sorry, it's not cool to see 101 with my starting pitcher. At one point, it was cool to see that. I'd rather him be 96, 99, mm-hmm. 99 when he has to get it up there, but work 94, 97, and he's got such good stuff everywhere else that I don't think he has to just hit 102, 101 just to be an effective pitcher. He doesn't. He's that good.
And you even mentioned, though, right there, Spencer Strider normally sits at 100, unhittable. He dropped down to 94. What happened?
Yeah, well, they
he got shelled.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
That's right. That's baseball right now. Is hitters have adjusted to 94. 94 was the outlier. You saw Dontrell Willett, you go, oh, my gosh, this is the outlier. And then all of a sudden, 94, come on, that's getting shelled.
Right, but, look at older movies like Major League and also Rookie of the Year. Like Major League Wild Thing came in, it was zoom, 98.
Right.
Oh, my God, he's throwing 98. He's going to kill somebody out there. Rowan Gardner, zoom. Look at that. That was 90. He hit 99 on the gun. This is we've never seen this before. Then Chapman's 106. we see Tennessee's got a pitcher throwing 104.
Yep.
It's just it's absurd. I don't think it's going to stop anytime soon.
No.
And it's scary for the guys that have crazy stuff because Spencer Strider looked like he was huge and built and was a guy that looked easy, that he was humming it in there. And then he breaks down again. It's just I'm a worrier with that. That's how you derail a season is when something like that happens.
Yeah,
Cole is a guy that just has such amazing stuff.
I just think there's too many factors. You're never going to know exactly what it is. There's just too much going on. The ideas, you want guys, you think the common sense is we'll just back off a little bit and extend your career. Tell the most elite athlete in their profession that. Go tell them to their face, hey, you need to back off a little bit when you have hundreds of millions of dollars staring them in the face. And so it's an epidemic, but I don't see it ending anytime soon because you always have the example of guys that don't blow out, that are getting those big contracts and that are doing well.
Well, and not just that, they come back now. It's no longer you're done. It's okay, I have to sit out maybe a year and a half,
right,
and then I'm back. Mm-hmm. And you're still getting paid under the contract, a lot of these guys either way. So they're like, what outside of a actual surgery and the pain to come back, you're still getting paid. Mm-hmm. You're still on the team. Mm-hmm. You're most likely going to come back just as strong. Why wouldn't you?
We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. And I do want to play this clip of Dan Hurley for Les Norman just to get his thoughts on that. We'll take a timeout. Come back. More Zone next. Man, let's hope we're hearing this music when we're getting ready to watch a Royals game. That would be awesome.
In my career, it was great to hear this because it just reminded me that on no team that I ever played on was I on the field in October. I was just listening at home, and that was okay.
That's all right, I guess. The UConn Huskies won the national championship last night back-to-back, and we talked about how improbable, impressive, dominant the run is that they had to replace four of their top six players off the championship team last year. And they come back and they're even more dominant this year. I heard this over the weekend and I immediately thought of you because being around youth baseball, being around, people that are going to the major leagues and everything and going to college and stuff. Here's Dan Hurley. He's talking about the types of players that they recruit and what they look at as to why he feels like maybe it's been different for him, but just his own personal experience.
There's measurable talents you have to have, right? The height, the speed, the skill set. But we spend a lot of time really focusing on the parents.
The parents?
Yeah, on the parents. Are they going to be fans while they're on campus of their son, or are they going to be parents? Are they going to, hold them accountable? Have an expectation that when something goes wrong, that it's not the coach's fault, that it's their son's got to work harder, he's got to do more, he's got to earn his role. We've got a real old school culture here of accountability. I'm an old school coach in terms of the tone I take with my players in practice, the expectations with effort, the focus on winning and we over me.
Like, what does that mean?
Have they played on seven different travel teams? Have they transferred to four or five different high schools? When you talk to the parents in the recruiting process, are they constantly complaining about the coaches after a bad game? Or are they, sending you a text or you having a conversation, where their son has got to do more. He's got to play harder. He's got to work on his skills. They tell on themselves. They drop hints. And, you've got the wrong type of people in that inner circle around your players. They'll sink your program.
What do you think, Les?
I think that that clip needs to be played for every youth team, every high school, every college, every pro, an aspiring professional player. I mean, he's dead right. I mean, just in coaching baseball, I've had some great teams, but I go back, and I wasn't a perfect coach either, but, you know, two things I wanted them to understand. They were created with a gift. Life could be a lot worse. They were created with a gift, and so we should glorify God in that. Play hard all the time and have fun while you're doing it, because if you're not having fun, let's just not do it. And so those two had to combine, and you hear this tongue-in-cheek all the time where people would say, oh, the kids were great. It was the parents. Mm-hmm. Well, not every kid is great, and not every coach is great, and I'm not perfect. But parents the parents he's talking about can make it really hard, because – they're raising their kid a certain way, and when that kid comes in, and if they're complaining a lot or they're passing the buck, and you can create problems within a team, and that just permeates through the whole thing. You know, a little bit of bad yeast works through the whole dough, right? And so I love that clip, and I hope a lot of people hear it.
When I worked for the 76ers, there was a player whose dad was very involved, and this is in the NBA.
Wow.
So this is NBA now. I don't want to name the player, but he ended up getting traded. He was a very high draft pick.
Was he the number one overall pick?
He was not. it was not
narrowing it down.
No, but it caused a lot of issues in the organization. There was a lot of back and forth because the dad in the NBA was getting involved. And no, it was not LaVar Ball either. That's not to say. But that's a real issue that teams, not just college, high school, little league, but even into the NBA and professional sports, they have parents being, oh, why isn't he playing 48 minutes? Why isn't he doing? Why is the offense not going through him? It's an issue.
It has to start early. I am not patting myself on the back with this at all. It's just sort of the approach that I've taken with my son. He's only 8, but he was in Indianapolis a couple of weeks ago with his mom watching Western Kentucky.
Yeah.
His team had a tournament on Saturday and Sunday. He didn't make it back for the two games on Saturday. So on Sunday, we're driving out to the game, and I said, and I hadn't talked to the coach, and I said, hey, buddy, just be prepared. You may be sitting today, and you may be last in the lineup. I want you to be prepared for that because you didn't play yesterday. Lineup comes out, he's batting last, and he goes, Daddy, you're right, I'm batting last. He wasn't pissed about it, he wasn't mad.
Yeah.
Because he was aware that this is what happens. You missed the games yesterday.
Yeah.
You're not going to go right in and bat third, you know? But, you know, again, not to pat myself on the back or anything, that's not what I'm trying to do. I'm saying it can start earlier.
Yeah.
It can start earlier besides just, high school and stuff like that. Also, thank you, Sterling. I appreciate the standing
ovation. I'll give you some love, too,
after. Thank you, Les. I appreciate it. After that, I told the coach, he better be batting first now. Damn it. It's my son.